Hello and welcome to Presenting, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godek, and with me today is James Ballard. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually really, really excited to have you on here because I hear you're a big-time Starfinder geek. Is that true?
I'm huge on all role-playing games, but Starfinder's kind of my wheelhouse because sci-fi is where I'm at.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the same with me. And I don't know how our paths haven't crossed more yet. I've been with the network for a year and we haven't had a conversation.
Yeah. I'm not very good at getting myself out into those areas. I had a daughter about a year ago and that really changed how I interacted with everything. No direction related. And I feel like I slight people, but I'm really not trying to.
Oh, so like your language skills have really deteriorated? Is that's what's happened, you know, having to talk to your daughter now?
No, it's great. So my daughter started babbling, like she's doing like babble talk. She says some stuff. She says mama, dada. But she started saying something that is close to Annyeong, which is really close to the Korean phrase for hello, Annyeong Haseyo. And my wife knows no Korean, none of that stuff. But she knows Annyeong from a character on Arrested Development. So her and my daughter will just go back and forth going, Annyeong, Annyeong. I'm just like, oh, can we teach her English?
Yes. Well, James is the co-host of No Direction Beyond, a monthly show covering the latest and greatest in the Starfinder universe. In addition, he is the author of the currently on hiatus Code Switch blog, as well as a cast member of the recently completed Stellar Actual Play podcast of the Starfinder Against the Aeon Throne Adventure Path. So first thing I want to know, can you tell me a little bit about No Direction Beyond? I kind of see the episodes. I see all of the great people you bring on. I've actually interviewed Owen. I've interviewed Alex. I interviewed Vanessa and a lot of your guests that you've had on there. But I don't really know actually kind of what the basis, other than you talk about stuff, Starfinder, you know, can you give me the tour of No Direction Beyond?
No Direction Beyond was a show that when Starfinder came out, everybody went, oh, we have to make. And me and Alex went, well, Starfinder's fun. We can do that show. and Paramount at the time was on board as well because, you know, a lot of open possibilities. So the original idea of No Direction Beyond was going to be No Direction but Starfinder. And No Direction is our flagship podcast. Mm-hmm. It is very good. I can't listen to anything that's 3 hours long. So yes. we all pushed for like hour long things. And I kind of view us as the Adult Swim version of No Direction. so we try to take more conversational angles and we try to have guests on each show if we can. We do some review episodes if we're not able to get somebody or if there's not a exciting new project to drop. But the people that write for Starfinder are actually pretty entertaining. It turns out that being good at writing kind of correlates to being interesting. So...
Yeah, you know, it's funny when you mention this is like the Adult Swim version of No Direction. You know that Ryan listens to these, right?
Oh, man, he must love the episode where Param curses. We got Param the curse on an episode. He's never done that in like 1,000 episodes of No Direction. We get him on like 13 beyond, and Param is basically like, I'm sick of your crap. I'm just going to slip. And we never let him live it down. He is so embarrassed of that.
So No Direction Beyond is actually like one of the co-flagships of our network now, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I think our viewer numbers are pretty comparable. I don't actually have many metrics of the downloads, but I bet you they're proportional to the sales between Pathfinder and Starfinder.
Yeah, I actually don't know what that proportion is, but I have a general sense, you know, when you go to a big convention, you know, like you see, like, have you been to PaizoCon?
I've never been to PaizoCon, but I have been to GenCon the last 3 years.
Yeah, so you go to Gen Con, you go to PaizoCon, and you see the number of tables for Starfinder, and then you see, like, you know, like 2 to 3 times as many for Pathfinder. You kind of get the sense for their perceived distribution anyway.
Yeah, I think that has to do with just the space in the market as a whole and what people come for. Like, in talking with people that don't talk with people that make the games, having to remind them that this is not a very flush with cash industry.
Like, right. Oh, yeah.
Your player base buy-in is lower than it would be for something like a video game or other mass-produced media. I mean, I would love to be as rich as Wizards for making Magic the Gathering, you know, a card game. But
You know, I was just reading that Wizards makes more money for Hasbro than Hasbro's toy divisions do.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, and Casey Stevens posted it up on his Facebook just like today. Isn't that amazing?
I don't know where any of this money comes from, to be honest. I guess seeing releases for things like Magic cards kind of clues me in a bit, but I played the Pokemon card game when I was like 7, and I don't touch trading card games. Can't do it.
Yeah, my kid plays Magic, and at the venue that we play here locally, Zulu's is the game place we play. Most of the nights it's packed with kids, people, adults, even not kids, but young adults playing Magic. And then we are able to carve out our couple tables in the corner. You know, that seems like a big money winner for him.
It's hard. Cause like I'm in Philly along like with Alex Agunis and stuff. And we had at one point, I think 4 stores running Pathfinder. Mm-hmm. In one of the stores had closed down because the owner just couldn't keep it up anymore. And it was a shame because that was actually my childhood hobby shop where I did all my Boy Scout stuff. The other two were pretty good with Pathfinder. Like they put up their own days. They were really supportive. Some of them even played like the owners or managers. The last place actually just were like, you guys are a waste of space. You do not come in and purchase $200 worth of product every time you sit down here once a month. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, yeah, our particular place, I know the owner pretty well. And actually, one of my players is like a sister-in-law of the owner. So they know us, they take care of us. But we also, they serve food and alcohol. Mm. So that's where we make it up with. We always make sure everybody buys a meal. A lot of people buy alcohol. So I think we're very comparable to what the Magic people are paying. So.
Oh, man, I would see. I did a lot of society, and I would not want to have alcohol with society people. But when we had our like home games there, that would be good.
No, it's. I mean, we're doing. We typically play on a Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. Nobody's getting drunk, but you know, to have a beer and you know, sit there and play. It's there are a couple of people that have multiple beers, and not the GMs though. I usually don't do that.
Just giggling because I think the third game I ever GM'd at a convention was at a Radisson in Philly. It was like the first convention I ever did. And I had 2 people that were sloshed out of their mind at my table. And one of them was a fighty drunk, but his friend was a nicey drunk. And the nicey drunk was like, I'm sorry, we have enough people here. I'm just the route of least resistance here is just to let him play the character. But if he gets rude, I'll punch him. And I'm like, thank you. We can work this out. We have an understanding.
Wow. So can you tell me a little bit about the process? You know, I know how I put together our stuff. I'm really curious how you guys schedule your guests and, you know, put together your episodes for No Direction Beyond.
So that actually is rotated a bit depending on who's been the producer of the show. Not technical producer, but the like executive producer. We try to highlight episodes with big product releases. We like to do reviews on new products if we can get through them quick enough, but we also really enjoy, and Paizo has actually asked us to do this sometimes where a new product is coming out or has come out. You want to talk with somebody who wrote it or helped with it. And that gives some introspection. You can do a little bit of review to get people excited. We did a lot of like intro stuff at the start, you know, like going over class direction and all that. And that's fine. I think that's a good place to start. But I think where we're at now, where we're focusing more on individual writers or themes where you actually get to know the game and the people behind it, I think that helps do a good job at introducing people to Starfinder beyond just, oh, it's that game. I play 2 scenarios at. It makes people go, oh, these are people that care about this game.
And who, now, I don't know all your technical expertise there. Who actually does the production side of things?
The production side was Param, and it switched over to Vanessa. I thank Vanessa very much for all of her effort in balancing me and Alex's different levels. For totally never getting mad at me for eating and forgetting to turn off my microphone. She's never gotten mad at me for that multiple times.
Yeah, wow. That's a lot of editing there, man. Come on.
You know, our times are a little bit weird. We were starting later, but I do have to go to bed at some point. So we've worked it out. I eat a little bit quicker now and quieter, and I'm better with feeding myself.
Right. And you're all East Coast time too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
They're more night owls than I am, though.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense because they're writers, and so that's when they have to write, you know.
Yeah. I have a 9 to 5, so
yeah. So, what days? When do you guys actually record? What days and times? I'm kind of curious.
We record on Wednesdays. I can bring up a schedule. At the beginning of this year, we kind of had a meeting of the minds of how we're, you know, producing the show going forward this year. And I had mentioned that we need a regular schedule because we would get bumped for like big product reveals, which totally makes sense. I had my basement flooded 4 times this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So like we had a lot of, you know, issues, some changes. And we had some people were going, no, the schedule seemed pretty regular. And then after about 30 seconds, everybody went back the episode list and went, man, you're right. There's so much variation. Cause we were originally going like every other, so once a month, but stuff gets moved because of product releases. So we have like a dedicated schedule where basically if you just go by Wednesdays, it kind of works where it's like, if you have a No Direction, you have a Geek Together, you have a No Direction, you have a No Direction Beyond. The reason why we do Beyond once a month is there's just not the density of material to cover, completely. We always entertain the idea of doing third party compendiums of people that are making stuff for the game. Cause we think that that's important to highlight too. We just keep, because of the monthly schedule, we keep running up against new product releases or, like good guest interviews. So we tend to go with those, but we've brought third party people on before. We brought, the Grimspace people. We bought, a bunch of people. We bought a bunch of third party people that aren't Alex or Vanessa.
Yes. Yeah. And you had Owen on there for a while as well. So.
And, Owen always has a story. Owen is a great storyteller.
Yeah, I interviewed him about this time last year, actually. And yeah, we could have gone forever because he had so many stories to tell. It was really a lot of fun. So what are some other challenges that you face, you know, kind of producing and recording and getting people in? Sounds like you easy getting guests. You set the schedule, dealing with the eating while you're recording. So sounds pretty simple now then, right?
Yeah, I think we've kind of hit a stride on how we go about doing things. Alex has done a very good job at like pinpointing like people that we want to go after at first and giving a lot of lead time, because that's kind of what you need. You need to make sure that you give people lead time so you're not pulling them off of projects and being flexible with their schedule and then being flexible with your schedule, which we've really appreciated because we know when we record, it's like just being around dinner time for West Coast people. I don't think there's really any overwhelmingly bad issues besides just the bad luck we've had over 2020. I mean, everybody had bad luck over 2020, but just with different issues with different casters and like those type of scheduling issues. But I think it's good. We play really well off each other, and like I wasn't able to be there the last visit because I had some real life stuff happen. But because Alex and Vanessa are people that have been around with us for so long, they're able to really pick up with these the people that we interview, because they know each other and they can, they do a very good job at going, yes, we're people that also write for Paizo, but we're also people that can afford to be politely critical of Paizo products as well.
Right. You know, that's actually one of the things I like about No Direction is even though, you know, we have a good relationship with Paizo, it's not like we are just, you know, just blowing sunshine all the time at everything they do. You know, there's definitely some critiquing going on as well.
I was very worried about that when the 2E thing started cropping up because I really like Pathfinder. I play a lot of Pathfinder. I really like Starfinder. I want to play more Starfinder. I, you know, can't get enough of it. But when 2E came out and we started doing the playtest for it, I didn't like it. I was not having fun. And I was worried that I would not be able to express why I didn't like the game. And I don't rant about it because I'm not on a Pathfinder show, and I don't just want to be negative all the time. There's some things about 2E that I think are legitimate good ideas that we've actually reincorporated into like our group's 1E games, but I was worried that being critical, because like we are in groups with people that write for this game, we interview people that write for this game, and when somebody that doesn't write, like doesn't do professional writing, goes, I don't like this, it feels bad, and I don't know why this is a thing, it's an acceptable knee-jerk to go, what do you know? I get it.
Right.
You know, perception of fun, et cetera, et cetera. So I totally get it. But I'm glad that we can do that and be critical, because I am a very forthright person with criticisms. I don't think you should have to shy away from an opinion. And that's also, I think you also notice a bit of a difference between East Coast, West Coasters on that as well.
Well, I think it should be an informed opinion too, though. I think that's an important part. So you and Alex have been with No Direction for a long time.
Alex was on there. I think he started 2 or 3 years before I did. And I started back in 2015, 2016. I was working my first job out of college because I met Alex at the game store that didn't like us because we didn't buy $200 worth of magic products on a random off day because I had gotten a job with Aramark to do like food service management. And I was going to move to Indianapolis. And at the last minute, I got another job closer to home and I backed out. And I just had a summer of not being able to do much. So I was looking when I was going to move to Indiana for things to do. And I had come across Meetup, like meetup.com listings for role-playing games. And just happened to find one that was Pathfinder. And I'd never played Pathfinder. I played a little bit of 3.5. Like, I think I played one game of 3.5 before showing up to a society table. and I think it was two tables in that I met Alex at that store. The first three scenarios, I ended up dying to burning skeletons and being thrown down stairs. I was super unlucky. I was just the person you threw in front of stuff, and it was a good time.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you get started with No Direction and kind of the network and everything? What were you doing at the beginning?
So I was starting to get more into the minutiae of how these games work, because I was somebody who really didn't play role-playing games until 2015. But I'd gotten really into them and invested with them and started looking at No Direction content. And in talking with Alex and in other people from the network, kind of got into the idea of going, well, there's stuff that I like here. I learn more about the game. I learn about developers. There's a lot of stuff that I learned from here. I don't learn about really weird stuff because I thought that was my favorite part of the game. It's just weird stuff. Pathfinder is a very weird game. So in talking about that, Alex just kind of encouraged me. He goes, well, if you want to write about weird stuff, if nobody else is doing it, you can write about weird stuff. So I wrote up a couple articles about it on like a basically like a back page type of WordPress site just to get the work together. And I think I made a body of work of like 12 or so articles, just based off of all sorts of things, and gave them kind of as a portfolio. And you know, kind of what I want to write. I want to kind of get my name out. Also, I was still kind of feeling out my career journey. And especially when you just start out of college, my degree is in nutrition. It's not a very monetarily rewarding degree. I think if any door opens, you should at least walk around and see what's inside. So I use that as kind of an in to figure out, is this something that potentially my life could take? And I went from there. And also, I just started having a lot of fun with writing that and being the person who writes about weird stuff.
And did that turn into your Code Switch blog?
Correct. Although I didn't care about the name because the NPR show was around at that time. But now that NPR show is much bigger. And if I when I go back and do workshopping this again, I'll probably end up changing the name. But yeah, it became into Code Switch, which I kind of envisioned as like Mythbusters, but for Pathfinder, based on the things that are written there. Because the Pathfinder Core rulebook is awful. It's like if somebody took a manual, like a tech manual for a milling machine or a saw, let's go with milling machine. It's like somebody took a tech manual for a milling machine, and translated it, into, Spanish, translated it back, and then added their footnotes to it. There's all sorts of things that just are taken or kept in from a previous edition of what this game was that they never touch again. And I've said this to writers, and they go, no, everything's there. And the best thing that ever hit anybody with about this game is if they've ever read the Core Rulebook, like Parham says he has, and nobody's ever read the Core Rulebook page cover to cover. you ask, what is the impact of two abjuration spells standing in contact with each other for a period of 2 days or longer?
Wow.
The answer is you get a +2 to your perception check to notice that there's two abjuration spell fields next to each other.
Yeah, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, it makes sense, but nothing ever brings it up. No scenario writer's ever done it because it's a stupid rule. It's just word diarrhea. It's way too much.
Right.
But that's a like what you do when you take a game and you update it based off an existing skeleton to make it a game to function in a way that you want to. You don't touch on everything. I'm pretty sure that wasn't a big part of 3-5 scenarios or the world building. Probably just an interesting effect from a previous edition. 2E cleared a fair amount of that up, though, in their credits.
So are you thinking about doing something like this for Starfinder then?
So it eventually became Starfinder focused while I...
I didn't know. I've never read it, so I apologize.
I noticed looking through it, I was going to link it to somebody, and it's not up on the main page. It's not up on the main site. You can Google it and find it. And I brought it up with Ryan and Perrin. I brought it up with them on the holiday special, actually, because once again, I am very confident in my work. And Ryan directly asked me, do you think your stuff is good enough for a special category? Yes, it is. They're very good. I think some of my favorites are how many people's blood would you need to create a sword, a long sword? The amount of energy in a battery in a Starfinder weapon and the relative gold, the Pathfinder value gold of the Dutch East India Company. A lot of them go very in depth. And I never, like, my degree's in nutrition. I never took physics or any of those sciences. So I had to learn those as I went. And as a side note, made me a lot more confident in those studies, actually.
You know what? I must have Googled some of these things because I remember reading some of this stuff before. It must have been when I was looking at joining the network to try to figure out what they were doing Starfinder-wise. I must have come up with it then. Because I remember the battery one. So
yeah, that was wild. That one only came together because I found that calculator. I would not have been able to figure, like, I wouldn't have been able to give a good explanation of what that amount of energy looks like. Like that's kind of where you fall into issues with writing on a technical level. Like when you're writing about technical things, like when you say something is, you know, the equivalent of 10 tons of TNT versus 100 tons of TNT, to your average person, that's like counting a billion from a million. Both are going to take you way too long and don't matter.
Well, I think you and I would get along really well. Like when I was playing through Dead Sons. Have you played Dead Sons?
I ran Dead Sons.
Okay, yeah, I played it and run it, right? But when I first started, I was playing it, and the large ship at the end, the Empire of Bones. Did you see the dimensions they gave on that?
Yeah, they were weird. They weren't right.
Yes, they were way off. I'm thinking, you know, they're giving the size and they give this tonnage, and it's like, no way, no way.
The density was way too light, or something like that.
And I was, of course, playing with a developer in my group at the time. I was just ranting on this. I said, don't you guys know anything? And he said, well, you know, not everybody here has been stationed on a large ship before and knowing these things. And I know, but think about it. You drive a car, you know how much that weighs, you know how big that is.
It takes 20 seconds to Google a battleship and find its relative.
Oh, I know. And that thing is like miles long. It's not 1,000 feet long. I don't know. That's there, and there are things like that. You know, I'll read them in scenarios. I'll read them in the adventure paths, and it's like, this doesn't make sense. And I've asked some of the developers about it, and they said, well, you know, we just try to figure it out. If it sounds good, then you know, it's whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be right. It has to fit somebody's mind of what that is.
So obviously, you're a huge Starfinder fan. What kind of Starfinder stuff are you doing now?
I have joined a Attack of the Swarm game that we're starting, I believe, this weekend. And that's kind of where I'm at for Starfinder. We finished up the Spooky Adventure Path.
Yeah, Signal Screams.
Yeah, Signal Screams. We just finished that about 2 months ago. We would like to do more society things, but we're still don't really have a appropriate space yet. Because Starfinder Society is where it's at. I'm going to be real. I think your quintessential Starfinder experience is playing the Society. The scenarios are interlinked amazingly. They're so good.
So we're actually in book 5 of Attack of the Swarm now. We just started book 6. Man, I'm actually really looking forward to when we finish it because we're playing Fly Free or Die right afterwards in that particular group. And then my other group, it's my actual play, Intrepid Heroes, we're in book 5 of that one. And then Jason Tondreau is going to actually GM book 6 for us. Ooh. And then Ron Lundeen is offered to run Devastation Arc. And so that'll start this summer. And I'm really excited about that. So I have like, you know, kind of a super high level one coming and a low level one coming. But I typically, my thing is I do a lot of society and conventions. I actually, I don't know if I've announced this yet anywhere. Oh, maybe I did on my show. So they'll be announcing, by the time this podcast is out, I'll be announced as a Five Nova GM.
Congratulations.
So, yeah. So I was kind of put back for about a year. I was really, really ill this past year. Mm. Unfortunately, but you know, I got way better. So that's looking good. But yeah, no, I love society play. I love the conventions and meeting everybody too. Do you do a lot of conventions?
I did do the Gen Cons, and I do a lot of local conventions in the area. Philly is weird. There's a lot of people, but not a lot of conventions. Usually they run out of one or two stores, but we do those.
Yeah, you have what PAX Unplugged is.
Oh yeah,
there, right?
I forgot that existed.
Yes. So, they don't have much for organized play though.
So. I'm gonna spill some tea on that one. At least on the first PAX Unplugged, they were not going to give us any support for that.
Yeah.
So we decided to just ask for space in their gaming room as just like a local organization. Mm-hmm. And they agreed. We got like 4 or 5 tables. Because it's kind of like going back to the game store analogy, where you're not buying stuff. There's appropriate atmosphere for a game store. And if you walk into a game store, a new person walks into a game store, and there's just people playing Magic, and they're not interested in Magic, the store doesn't seem like a game store anymore. It seems like a Magic store. So having variety is, I think, part of your atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But once we got that, we started scheduling. We just started organizing it because we're like, whatever, we won't even get support. We'll just have fun. And then once we got tables, Paizo came around and went, oh, well, if you give us the ability to do this, we'll take this all organizing off your hands. And it's like, well, we already got this 3/4 of the way done. I guess you can have it. But I heard a little bit later there was an issue with funding. And when the company asked, the convention wanted money. When we asked, they didn't.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I had heard something about that previously. Mm-hmm. I was going to go last year, and then I wasn't doing well. So not 2020, but 2019 I was going to go. And then 2020, they didn't do anything, did they?
No, they canceled it. I was at the 2019 one. You would have met me there.
Yeah, it would have been fun. But that was before I was doing No Direction stuff. Or, you know, we'd actually, I think, just gotten started with our actual play. And I don't know.
No, you would have heard me in that room. We did the we did the secret arc for Society, like the ending scenario. And at one point, this is completely unrelated to Pathfinder, by the way, as to why you would know that I was there in that room. Yeah. We'd gotten Chinese food delivered, and me and somebody else had gotten mapo tofu, which is a dish that has like tofu. It's super spicy, and it comes with a lot of like chili oil on it. Mine was overflowing, so I couldn't open it at the table. I'm like, I'm really hungry. We've been here for like 6 hours with this very lovely GM who's tolerating our terrible characters. Because Philly power, we can't help it. We're very strong players. So I'm doing this, and the player next to me goes, well, why don't you just take it to the bathroom and pour it out? And I stand up and I go, I'm not going to take my food to the bathroom at a convention, you animal. And I heard the whole room just quiet down. I'm like, oh man, I really did blow you up there. I'm not doing that. I found a workaround, but you wouldn't know it, I was there.
Well, are you going this year if it happens?
I'm still on the fence about it, to be honest. I am somebody who is probably more cautious than other people. Mm-hmm. And it depends on if I can get enough time off from helping with my daughter and all that.
Right. Yeah, I forget. I'm like way older than you. My youngest is 23 years old. So just to give you some perspective, you know, I started playing RPGs with the old gray box of D&D where they didn't have dice. So I'm like older than dirt, basically. But I still like doing this stuff. And it's really funny because almost everybody I play with is younger than me, you know? But you know, it doesn't really matter to me. I have fun. Yeah. My kids won't play with me though. My daughter plays a lot of 5e, and I've tried to get her to do Starfinder because she plays at my local game store, but just not at my tables. So
hopefully she'll come around. I think that's a youth thing, you know.
She's 27. I don't think she's gonna come around at this point.
I'm 31, and I still learn new things about myself. You never stop changing. You're always a developing person.
Yeah. All right. Okay. I'll believe you. I don't know. She works for Nintendo now, so she's just doing all that video game stuff anyway.
But there's something irreplaceable about table gaming.
Oh no, for sure, man. I played video games for a long time. Mm-hmm. It was only because I was in the service moving around. I wasn't any place where I could get a regular group playing. And when I found a regular group here in the Seattle area, man, it's been the best thing ever. You know, it was like so much more fun.
A good group is so much more than just playing as well. Like they become mm-hmm. a group of people that you can like talk with and use the game as a way to deal with like anxieties and things. Like mm-hmm. it's a supportive environment, which you don't always get in regular life and regular interaction.
Oh, especially during the pandemic. I mean, we literally will have a lot of times where we're scheduled to game and, you know, somebody say, you know, I don't really feel like running things today. And we'll just sit and talk for a couple hours instead of our normal gaming, you know, and it's fun. We like to do that. So,
yeah, my Pathfinder Society table and Starfinder Society table became people that I just hang out with. Like we're playing Valheim together now because like two of them have moved to Kentucky and, you know, we're pandemic-y. But like, you know, it helped me meet a lot of new people and helped me like get out of my shell. Like I was not a public speaker person before role-playing games. And in role-playing games, it made me such a better public speaker. So much better. Mm-hmm. It helps a lot.
Hey, so kind of along those lines, what advice do you have for people interested in if they want to start like a show like you guys have done?
If you want to start a show, don't expect it to line your pockets. If you're starting with that idea that this is the wrong field, unless you have Matt Mercer or somebody.
Yeah, I was going to say, so I'm not going to be getting any paychecks here from Ryan then?
You know, I'm not accounting. I'm the Adult Swim crew. We're over here on a whiskey boat. Like we're not part of the main infrastructure. The thing that I do like about No Direction is all the like Patreon earnings go back into production.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
And in a very honest and open way, like I could ask Parham where this stuff goes and he could actually give me a list by list. He is such an organized man. I think if you wanted to start your own RPG show, just be enthusiastic. You don't have to be off the wall. Hey guys, welcome to this cat. You don't have to be that. You just have to be confident and excited in what you're doing and have somebody, if you're doing it with other people, that you're okay with playing off of. If you're doing this with somebody because they have access to one part of the tech and you have access to the other and you get along, that's probably not the bedrock for anything long going. And you know, you work to cultivate a following. I mean, jumping into No Direction, like blogging and stuff, is kind of, for this sphere, kind of like easy mode. There's such a long history of this show. I mean, there's people from 10 years ago from when the show was called Private Sanctuary. Like, you have this huge backlog. You have this name recognition, this trust in this area, even if people aren't always, like, it's not at the forefront. It might not be a site people visit every day, but even when I've talked to people like at cons that recognize me, they'll speak positive memories that, you know, so make your show the start of an area or the start of a group or the start of a community that you can then work from. Cause from that, you'll make better things.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I, when I started doing all my shows, I didn't think of any of that stuff. It was like, we were just doing things and we thought we'd record it, you know? So.
I think honestly, that is a good way to start. That's how, like, you don't succeed in anything without trying it. It's okay if the first things you do suck. Like, you're not going to find out why you're bad at something until you're bad at it. And it's fine to be bad at stuff. There's an anime that really, really, probably shouldn't have watched when I was like 13, but really kind of focused my life. It's called Golden Boy. It follows the life of this law student dropout, Kentaro Oe, who drives through the Japanese countryside as a freeder, taking jobs at new places. And he just goes around to different jobs, learns a new job, usually fails at it, gets in a whole heap of trouble. And by the end of the episode, he's figured out how to do the job and how to fix his error. And he just goes around chanting the, you know, the mantra, life is study, where you're always learning new things. And regardless of even setbacks, when you have a setback, you learn from that. You learn that that might not be the thing you want to do. The show is probably not for 13-year-olds anymore. but I think it's a good message. It's just you should always go out and try something unless the cost of failure is ridiculously high. If you're going to jump in on Amazon stocks because it's funny, that cost of entry is way too high.
So speaking of trying new things, what's next for you?
So next for me is we're going to keep doing No Direction Beyond episodes. I'm going to be on the next one, as long as my basement doesn't flood again. we're going to go through that Attack of the Storm Adventure Path. Me and Alex have kicked around doing more short form material. And I've been the holdup on that, TBH. But we've been going back and forth about doing that. Because there is a rise in content has changed. The landscape of content online has changed. It went from really short form because that's all the space that you had. Like all your YouTube videos were 30-second long because nobody's camera held 16 gigs. Then you went to really long form content because you had the space and people were willing to watch it. But you're seeing a contraction back to more shorter form content. And you see it in every social media platform in the form of things like stories, shorts. So doing something like that, I think, would be helpful for the network. And I think we can do it in something that in a way that we would find interesting, because that's also important. Like, I don't write for Pathfinder or Starfinder. I don't write for Paizo. I don't have any aspirations of being a writer. I have written exactly one product, and it was it was a product that I wrote for Alex that I wrote for myself. Because we were playing through Strange Aeons and we had ways to come back after we died. And I didn't like that. I wanted to die and I wanted to have negatives attached to it. So we have this whole basically like crit death, system that, we wrote up and Alex edited it cause he's a good editor. That's the only thing I've ever written. So for a lot of the people on the network, this is your advertising, similar to, developers running their adventure paths. That is a great thing to do because it gets you name recognition as a developer and increases your brand. Because that's when you're a writer, that's what you sell. You sell your writings and your brand. Because if either one of those is off, you're not going to succeed. Because those are your products. Like if Stephen King writes a clunker of a book, it's still going to sell like wild because of the name recognition. Vice versa, if you write something great and nobody knows who you are, you're probably not going to get it picked up unless you hit a break. That's what something like No Direction or doing your own blog or show can help with, by increasing, you know, your mind share there. So I don't need it for advertising. I do this stuff because I like it and I like interacting with our fans. We have a lot of very good fans, very nice people. And I think the community that No Direction, everybody before us set up is a good community. And I would be remiss to see it miss out on any area where it could continue to expand and bring more good, interesting idea people together, you know?
No, I hear you. Well, James, thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I hope I didn't go too long.
No, this is perfect. And it was really great to get a chance to chat with you. And I actually hope we get to talk a little bit more.
Hey, me too. I always have an affinity for Coasties, you know?
All right.
My best friend from high school went into the Coast Guard. You guys have great stories.
I have a lot of them and I tell them a lot. Maybe someday I'll do that online, but I haven't done that yet. So. All right. Well, have a good evening. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Take it easy.